Hey, and thanks for listening. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Let's get started. This is episode 20 of True Voice Media Conversations, our podcast series. And today I have on the podcast a gentleman by the name of Nick Eubanks. He is a part-time clown, also runs a website called SEO Nick, along with a consultancy under the name I'm From the Future. Nick does a whole bunch of awesome stuff, and we're going to talk about some of those things. He is definitely one of the foremost authorities I've ever met in the field of SEO, definitely among the top three people I know in the entire field. So it's really great to have you on the show. Thanks, Nick. What's up?
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff. No, I'm excited to be on here, man. After stopping by your college class, and I think we had a pretty good time. This just seemed like an obvious segue from there. So
yeah, it was definitely a good segue after the class. And that was one of the most well-received classes of the semester, you know, not just in terms of what all the students were saying, but what they got out of it and what they worked into their final projects. A lot of them really referenced a lot of the things that you had brought up, and I think it made a big impact on them. So, you know, thanks for doing that also.
Well, that was a blast, man. That was an awesome class. You could tell you were really kicking ass with that whole student base, because that was the most engaged group of people I think I'd ever spoken to. And I've spoken to much bigger groups, but nobody gave a shit about anything I've ever said the way those guys actually did. So that was fantastic.
That's awesome. Well, I tried to structure the class differently and everything. And I hope Drexel invites me back to do the class again. I think the feedback from the class was really good, but I structured the class in such a way where I think it was very different from probably anything else that they did at Drexel, where I really wanted to make it about like autonomous learning. Cause as you probably well know, you didn't learn as much in school as you did when you just started doing shit. So yeah. I tried to structure the class. So it was like, read a book, here's some blog posts to look at, listen to this podcast, tell me what you learned. And I gave them, you know, some foundational elements. So, you know, hopefully that was part of the reason why they were engaged, is I kind of required that from them, because this is the only stuff you're going to get from my classes. These times where I bring in guest lecturers, or I give you 45 minutes of content to kind of digest. So it was good. So let's talk about some things, man. You, you know, contrary to what we're doing. So, you know, I'm building a service-based company where we're working with clients hand in hand, consulting them. And that's what I love to do. And you're doing that, and you guys are killing it with it. But what it looks like the direction you're really going in is building and buying companies, building companies, and leveraging the magic of paid and organic search to really win in that space. So can you just tell me a little bit about some of the projects that you're currently working on? And then let's kind of jump down the rabbit hole a little bit and talk a little bit further about any of those individual projects.
No, I would love to. The biggest probably flagship project that I've been on for about 2 years now is Traffic Safety Store. That's probably how I'm best known in the e-commerce circles. I jumped in there. It was an existing business, so it's about 12 years old now. So it was, you know, 10 years old when I showed up. Had been on the internet for about 7 of those 10 years, and was sort of just starting to get the wheels greased in terms of e-commerce. So it's a homegrown e-com platform, all on ASP.net. You know, they were still running web forms when I got there. We're now completely an MVC. There was a lot of technology challenges that were sort of upstream from really being able to hit the search and the user experience stuff that I really like, you know, to dive into. I can't talk exact numbers because the majority owner would probably get upset, but I can give you a ballpark. So, you know, we're sub 5 million when I showed up, and we're over 10 million at this point, with no real signs of slowing down. So, you know, we're shooting to be a $50 million company in the next 2-3 years. And, you know, all that upside has been focus on growing the top of the funnel, more qualified traffic to our category and subcategory pages, and then really putting a focus on streamlining the user experience and making the website as fast as possible. That's probably my main passion, you know, is really just the e-commerce. I love the idea that we can attract people from anywhere, anywhere we're willing to ship to. And that's been something that's actually been pretty tremendously scalable. The visibility that some of the stuff I've been doing and testing out over at Traffic Safety Store has given me, allowed me to get approached by a small conglomerate partnership between Elmer's products and some crazy Toronto-based entrepreneurs. And we just launched schoolsupplies.com last month in June. The goal there is to try to reduce the number of arrests that happen at Walmart and Staples while shopping for school supplies. And I mean, it's been traffic's come almost right away. I think, you know, contrary to the EMD update that, you know, a lot of people got bugged out about, I think that having a branded EMD that is your head term, I think really lends itself well. If for nothing else, it's more Penguin safe link building. If you're going to be doing it, you know, it's, hey, please, you know, please link to us. Or if you, you know, if you sponsor an event or you run an event and you're out there and you're at, you don't have to tell people what the anchors are anymore. If our head term is school supplies and our, you know, brand name is school supplies and the website is schoolsupplies.com, we're going to get the keyword rich anchor text we want regardless. And we're not manufacturing that. That's the brand name. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the little tricks from the old school of SEO still work. Just have to make sure you're doing them right. Yeah. Craziest thing though, is most of the traffic that we've been seeing, and we're actually getting pretty good traffic for only being, you know, a roughly almost 2 month old website at this point, is all the long tail variations, that contain one or two of those head terms. So, you know, I'd call those shoulder terms. And it's been working out pretty well.
So this is only, you said it's a 2 month old company or a 2 month old website.
We built the MVP on Shopify just to get it to market. So we've got 25 teachers across the US that we've used to form a national teacher advisory board to help us curate these bundles. So it's not about buying individual products. It's spending, you know, $67 to $97 to get like a whole crap ton of supplies that go along with the most common lesson plans at all the different grade levels, K through 12. And building those bundles and then really getting the content right, figuring out what that go-to-market strategy was going to look like and how we were going to launch, you know, with the partnerships that we were able to lock down with Scotch, 3M, Crayola, and Elmer's. Took a bunch of time. Jeff Goldenberg, the guy leading the project up out of Toronto with his partner, Andrew Tischler, formerly of Glossybox. Those guys are maniacs though. I mean, they've been doing all the legwork. I just had to sew together a website and you know, throw some links at it. I had the easy end of the stick there. So,
did you have that domain for a long time? Did you have to buy that from someone for a hefty sum? I mean, that's like a pretty substantial domain name that you've got working on.
That's a great story. I was on a call with Jeff about a year ago at this point on Clarity, and he's like, hey, I've got the opportunity to buy this domain. You know, what do you think? And immediately I'm like, yes, buy it. I don't care what it takes, buy that domain. Just, you know, I've got a little domainer in me like that sort of grew out of the SEO side of things, and I didn't care what he was going to do with it. I just know he should have that domain. Who shouldn't have that domain?
Yeah.
And that was sort of the springboard for everything else. That domain was the legitimacy factor that got his foot in the door at Elmer's. And then, you know, what we used to raise two angel rounds of funding to build the MVP and build the team and everything else. So
as an aside to that, I have a sick little kind of side hobby addiction spending habit of buying up domains that I think are awesome. I probably buy between 5 and 7 different domains, pretty much 80, 90% of them I don't do anything with, but I just think they're such good domains that I buy them. I'm wondering like what your habit is and what one of the best ones that you have in terms of a story is, because I'm going to quickly tell you mine. Back when Chappelle's Show was a thing, and you know, he had done the Lil Jon sketch, the what? Okay. Yep. You know, that whole sketch. I bought domain called liljonmashup.com, and I wanted to build a site where you could upload a song and have 4 buttons that would just have either the Dave Chappelle version or the Lil Jon version of like the 4 primary Lil Jon catchphrases. And you could actually sit there and hit the buttons as the song is going. And at the end, you could download your recorded Lil Jon mashup. That was my idea. I never built it. I also bought freepunchinthefacecom, or it might have been punchfrom.me, so that like if somebody pisses you off, you could just send them a punch in the face via the internet. So these are the ridiculous things that I buy. I'm curious what, if you have the same habit, given that you're, you know, you're like, buy that domain. Like what are some of the ones that you've rocked out on?
Oh man, I have so many ridiculous domains. I probably have, I've been trimming as much as I can recently, just like, you know, coming to that tough realization after you hold on to a domain for 5. I've had some domains 15 years. It's just like, I'm never really going to do anything with this. I might as well not renew it. I'm probably in like, you know, I've got a couple hundred myself. WLSA, the umbrella company that I'm a partner at that owns Traffic Safety Store, Airport Safety Store, Parking Block Store, trafficcones.com was a recent acquisition of ours. We have probably 3,500 domains. Bought for category domains. We own stuff that we're never going to use, but we own it just so competitors can't get it. Things like, you know, rubber speed bumps, plastic speed bumps, all those individual product domains that would allow some niche shop to pop up and potentially take away part of our online market share. And so it's really just brand protection. Mm-hmm. I have some ridiculous domains though. I mean, just from like, you know, being out drinking at the bar in college and having an idea, and it seems like a good idea after your third or fourth pitcher of Rolling Rock, but you never should actually buy it.
That's a rule. Right? Do not buy domains after a third pitcher of Rolling Rock. That is the cutoff.
So one of the most ridiculous ones I think I ever bought, and this is such a bad idea in retrospect, was right when like LinkedIn was getting popular, but way before they were public. And we're out one night and we're like taking pictures of each other just being stupid and wasted out in Manion somewhere. And we're like, oh man, if only there was like a social network for drunk people and you could post all the photos of you and your drunk friends the night after, but it wasn't on Facebook and you had to be over 21. We could run sponsorships for beer companies. And we immediately start thinking about the monetization angle.
Amazing.
And try to figure out, you know, what should we call it? Well, it's the opposite of LinkedIn. So if you're not LinkedIn, maybe you're out hammered. You're out in public and you're hammered. So I have outhammered.com for no reason other than we thought that that was a good idea at one point in time.
Not a good idea. I actually still think it's a good idea, but in practice, it would probably be the worst thing for the world. But then again, I mean, really, there's a comment section on YouTube, and we've seen how badly that turns out. So how bad could it possibly be?
I try to buy like domains now that at least have either – whether it's a business idea, a brand idea, or at least like have the potential to be an affiliate page. So like I've been working on like a dieting blog that probably will never come to fruition, but I've been like throwing just a couple hundred words at it here and there for 2 years now. And it's like simplefastmeals.com. Never going to do anything with it ever, but I have it and it's sitting there gathering dust.
I know how to make a lot of really simple, fast meals. Have you seen my Instagram? I mean, that's all I do.
If you want to take it over, man, you have at it.
I feel like I need a partner in it. You have so much brains around how to do this. I just chase passion. I'm really bad at like a lot of the monetization side. I'm just lucky people pay me to do what I love, what I'm doing now. That's the only reason I'm making money, not from any like pre-thought out brilliant strategy for, you know, how to grow revenue. It's just like I do good work because I like what I'm doing.
All the best entrepreneurs I know are able to just recognize an idea, test it quickly. And, you know, I'm a big believer in the fail fast.
Yeah.
Like failure's awesome. Fail all day long. I fail every week at things.
Yeah.
But if you're going to fail quickly before you dig yourself in a hole of debt or you make a complete ass out of yourself.
Wise words. Wise words. That will be a quote on the show notes for all of the listeners. I'll need to know that one. That and the one about not buying domains after the third or fourth pitcher of Rolling Rock. So back to the using SEO and the sites that you've put together and everything, you know, what are some of the things that you've learned, I guess? What are some of the ways that you failed fast early on with, you know, sites like your traffic, is it traffic?
Safety store.
Safety store. There we go. I know you have traffic cones and there's a bunch of, but the traffic safety store, I mean, and among those and your other different, e-commerce online stores, what are some of the things that you've learned early on that you would pass along as, good advice? I mean, you've already given us the jewel of buying domains, as a defensive maneuver. You know, you've got, you mentioned a little bit about UI and UX design and user experience and, SEO and all these different tools that you have at your disposal to help kind of grow these companies, you know, talking about taking from under 5 to over 10, you know, what are some of the things that you would pass along to someone that's thinking about building one of these online businesses?
So I actually have a great story that's definitely sort of technical SEO related, and it's about domains and domain age and 301 redirects. So the traffic safety store actually started out as Parking Block Store, and I don't need to get too much into the history, but it was a joint venture between DuPont and Conagra. So it was a DCV company back in like 1997, and it was just a parking block manufacturing company. Essentially, you know, manufacturing was done out of Canada, and you bring them to the U.S. and we'd sell them. And, you know, there are molds up there, but anyway, enough history. It's not that exciting. But when I came in the door, you know, parkingblock.com was its own website, non-e-commerce, just an info site. But it ranks fantastically well for parking blocks, plastic parking blocks, rubber parking blocks, removable parking blocks, you know, all of these super qualified e-commerce terms. But we were just, you know, so we had links placed on specific pages and we're using image links to get people who were on a rubber parking block page, who searched for rubber parking blocks, got to parkingblock.com on the rubber page, and then are reading about parking blocks and then maybe they're looking to buy. So we'd have a text ad or an image ad with the link over to the rubber parking blocks page on Traffic Safety Store. So sending great qualified traffic. Average revenue per visit was like $60, which is insane. It was going really well. And I was like, well, like, what if we could eliminate that click path? What if we could eliminate the need for people searching for parking blocks to first land on parkingblock.com and you know, have us run the risk of them not making the hop to the safety store? So I had the brilliant idea of let's 301 the root domain, parkingblock.com to trafficsafetystore.com/parkingblocks. Makes perfect sense. We'll just pick up all the parking block rankings and we'll get right to our e-commerce site.
What could go wrong?
So did the 301, if you know, propagated out, because both the domains are at GoDaddy, their DNS is fantastic. So it propagated within an hour and we started seeing, you know, a nice boost of traffic to our parking block category. And all the, you know, the subcategories for commercial, industrial, plastic, rubber, blah, blah, blah. Started going pretty well, and we picked up all the rankings. And about 2 weeks later, you know, just doing a check on the rank reports, and we noticed that we no longer rank number one for parking block. Traffic Safety Store is now ranking number two, where we ranked anyway beforehand, right under parkingblock.com. We're now ranking under Amazon. And then when it jumbled around again 3 or 4 days later, it was Grainger and then us, then Amazon. But we were sitting in number two. And the click-through degradation from number one to number two is significant. So, like, you know, it's all speculation. There's really nobody that has a big enough data set to be able to accurately dial in what that click-through rate is. But somewhere in the 36% range for number one is probably a safe bet, whereas number two is like 18%. So you're talking about like a 50% degradation in your click-through rate. For e-commerce, that is massive. That's tens of thousands of dollars a month you're losing out on. So I was like, fuck, I fucked up. What I didn't realize was having Parking Block in number one as an info site that links to our e-commerce site with the e-commerce site ranking number two was actually a better experience. People were coming into the Parking Block site. They weren't getting sold. They weren't looking for e-commerce necessarily. They weren't looking to buy something. Maybe they were just coming for information and it left an impression on them. The Traffic Safety Store brand is represented there. If they want to click through and look at prices, great. If they don't, leave, have a nice day. Hopefully you'll remember our brand when you come back, or at least you'll do a search again and you'll find us or parkingblock.com.
Yeah, I'm just thinking the experience where I'm just thinking, you know, the experience would be that you go and you see the number one and you get all the information, but then maybe you're like, okay, well then what do I do next? And then your next step would probably be go to the number two link. So you're actually, because you own the two, you're getting the one and two results combined. It would seem, right?
No, exactly. But the crazy thing about it was, you know, was not realizing that Parking Block really is an informational query. Rubber and plastic, those are still informational queries. They're not commercial investigation, or if they are, they're not transactional. They're not far enough down the funnel for us to sort of force you an e-commerce result when maybe that's not what you're looking for. So that was one where I sort of had to swallow my pride and was like, shit. You know, this did not have the desired effect on rankings. We were more effective by holding the top three positions for all of those SERPs as opposed to just trying to hold, you know, just having our propping our e-commerce site up. So, you know, that's one of not – there's not been many times where I've done a root-level redirect for a domain and had to turn it off. So that was when we had to turn it off. We took it – you know, we had a major hit for about a week when Google was trying to figure out what was going on. And then when the SERPs reset, we picked our rankings back up. You know, we started to see the valuable referral traffic start to come back in. So hard lesson learned there.
So how do you go about determining what is – I mean, because you have, you know, this wealth of experience in primarily in e-commerce among other things. But, I mean, e-commerce seems to be like really your specialty. How do you determine what's a buying term versus what's not? I mean, that just made sense to you that, like, you know, plastic, rubber, these are informational queries versus – I mean, obviously there's, you know, adding terms like – more specific terms. So you're looking for something specific, like red sweaters is going to be somebody looking to possibly buy a red sweater. They're probably not looking into sweaters.
Yeah, so red sweater would be like a commercial investigation term, where like women's red sweater would be a commercial investigation term, but probably weighted a little bit heavier toward the transactional side of things.
Yep. Cheap women's red sweaters are probably the best one for purchase.
Well, the best one would be a brand, a size, or a location. If you're looking for a medium, you know, women's red sweater, or red sweater, women's medium, that's a transactional term. It's,
gotcha.
You know, you're far enough down that you're ready to make the purchasing decision. So, you know, there's four buckets of intent, right? You've got informational, navigational, commercial investigation, and transactional.
Okay. And are you going to explain all of those? Because you're going to have to explain all of those at least briefly.
So informational is, you know, these are head terms. So the best way to think about it is, you know, the four stages of intent that move from information gathering to, you know, I want to buy something right now, mirror, the number of queries, or the number of terms in the keyword itself within the query. So, you know, a head term, a 1 or 2 word keyword is going to be most likely an informational term. You know, a navigational term. So an informational term for you would be social media company. A navigational term would mean they've met you, or they've heard of you, or they saw True Voice Media out somewhere in the social world. They type in True Voice Media, Philadelphia. That's a navigational term. They're already familiar with your brand. They've heard of it. They've had, so they've met you, you know, at a bar. You bought them a picture of Rolling Rock. You gave them a business card.
But not three.
They're going out looking for your company at this point. So navigational is tough. Navigational tends to be a good conversion term, but it's not quite the same as commercial investigation, which is, you know, people are, you know, commercial investigation are people looking for reviews, or, you know, sometimes it's locate, like it could be location. So if you're a physical business and people are looking for your terms related to your products or services with a zip code or a town name or a street name, that's more commercial investigation. It could be navigational, but, you know, that's them trying to investigate, where can I go to buy these things that I want to buy if I have to go into a store to buy them. You start talking about things like query modifiers like coupons or for sale or sizes, colors,
deals, clearance.
Yes, but like, you know, pink purple polka dot men's t-shirt with fuzzy kitten on it, size small, is a buying term. Like, anybody who sells that term, God forbid, you know,
that person just picturing that, buy that when mentally. I'm going to run that search query afterwards. When I go back through this, I'm going to take that search query down, and I'm going to see if anybody sells that.
Well, there's a whole new market there for you.
That's a long tail.
Well, I think long tails are always going to convert better. The more words in the query, the higher the probability the lower the probability of you ever finding it, ranking for it, but the higher the probability of, if you do rank for that term, you getting that sale or that phone call or that credit card number, whatever the conversion action actually is there.
You may only have 10 search queries for it, but you can sell those 10. I've been looking for this one pair of sunglasses for approximately 4 years now. They're discontinued, and I don't think I'll ever find them, but I still have everything about it. The sizes, the color, the brand, the model number, everything. And I will probably never find it because I've gone 7 pages deep and I just can't find it.
I've been trying to find the Oakley Tron backpack for like 2.5 years without the stupid Oakley sunglasses. It's like $1,400 because these sunglasses are like super limited edition. I don't want the sunglasses. They're ugly as sin. I just want this backpack. I can't find it anywhere. It's like it's a completely opposite problem. Nobody has realized that there's a market just for the backpack. Buy them both for $1,400. Sell me the backpack for $500. Go sell the glasses for $1,200. I don't give a shit. Sell me the goddamn backpack.
So for anybody listening, if you happen to have the Tron Oakley backpack, get in touch with Nick. He will buy it from you for stated $500. And I would like a 10% commission for that transaction. Let me ask you a little bit about – so you've run through those four different types of terms. So we're talking now about search terms, and I want to – steer it towards something that I have found a problem not only for myself but for my clients, and it just seems to be the common problem, which is brand versus search term, right? So I, as a branded company, I've chosen that we are a social business agency. We're not a social media agency. We use social media in our keywords, and we do offer social media marketing help. Social media is a component of it, but social business is the overarching theme, and it's where I want people to know us because I want to make sure that we're in that particular conversation. But if you look at the number of queries for people that are looking for a social business agency, it is painfully, painfully low. And this, you know, I'm not the only company to deal with something like this where I have to bite the bullet and put social media marketing in my terms prior to social business. How do you go about navigating that space in your work with clients and in your own work where there's a branded term that you may want to use, but you have to use an industry term? And then the second piece of it is, if you do want to continue using that branded term, do you have any strategies for somehow steering existing search traffic towards the branded term instead? So Xerox versus copier, Kleenex versus tissues, things like that. How do you do that?
Market awareness is not a business you want to get into unless you've got, you know, Coca-Cola money. The real trick here, and this is something I had to sort of learn the hard way, is if you're in a services business and you want to rank for the services terms, like if you're in a consulting services business, if you're a plumber or an electrician or a mechanic, different story. Those services terms are going to be great customers. They're going to be good leads. when I started, you know, an SEO company in, you know, late 2007 and thought that, you know, it was really important to rank for like SEO company Philadelphia and SEO Philadelphia, those were the worst goddamn leads we ever got. There are people that are out there. They have no idea what they want. They don't know. They don't understand what the service is. They want to pay nothing. They want to rank immediately. Those are always going to be the worst freaking leads out there. You know, the best leads that are going to come for a consulting company are going to come from people finding you through reading informational sources that they trust. And I'm not going to get onto my content marketing soapbox, but you know, the best leads that I've ever gotten that I, you know, that I sell for the most part through SEO, like one of my SEO leads companies, is come through people who read my blog post, take the time to figure out who I am, that I don't really do SEO consulting, and who will send me an email and just say, hey, you know, they're not people who are coming to a contact form on a website. Those people suck. Those, you know, the people who come and hit my contact form on my blog are asking for free SEO advice. I'm trying to, you know, my Amazon affiliate site's not ranking and I've been doing this for 12 months and I have no traffic. What can I do? Go fuck yourself. Like, one of my friends in this space took my favorite approach that I've seen so far. So there's a brilliant, brilliant guy. He's 20 years old. He's down in Tarpon Springs, Florida, named John Cooper. He's got a fantastic blog called pointblankseo.com. Go to his contact page. Anybody listening to this, you, Jeff, as well, go to his contact page. That contact page and the messaging on his contact page is the result of the shitty leads that come through ranking well for head keywords in a consulting services vertical. There's no good to be had from it. I think branding yourself and placing yourself, like creating market positioning around being a social business agency is going to take you so much further than the 10 or 15 leads you may not pick up that are going to be crap leads anyway from search. I wouldn't even worry about it.
Okay. I like that. That's good. That makes me feel better about the decision. That's awesome. I'm definitely going to put the Point Blank SEO contact form on there. That's awesome. So in that same kind of conversation, you're not trying to rank for SEO Philadelphia or anything like that. How do you make the determination between online marketing, digital marketing, online conversion optimization, paid search consultancy, AdWords, pay-per-click? Like, what terms do you choose and why do you choose them? How do you go about even figuring that stuff out? I mean, you know, you look at it, and for you, in the same way that I look at a lot of the social stuff, I'm like, well, duh, that's stupid. That's not going to work. It's obvious because that's my space. Your space is that you're looking at it and you can identify why is this keyword going to work and not going to work. How do you go about figuring out what words you're going to use? Because you can say the same service in 100 different ways.
Well, what has worked well for us has been trying to really pay attention to the solutions that people are actually looking for. SEO is not a solution, right? It's a tool. It's just one tool in your marketing toolbox. Just like social tool. Like, you know, you don't want people who are looking for social media companies. That was a good decision. That's not what you are. That's not the solution you provide. That's one of the tools you're juggling. You know, what we focused a lot more on was like how to do keyword research or how to do keyword research for SEO. Like, it's the solution that people are, like, the solution language that we want to rank for. How to increase website traffic. That's a great keyword that we rank pretty well for that at least gets the right kind of traffic in front of us. And then at that point, it's the job of the content and the experience of the website to tell the story of how we approach increasing traffic. And hopefully we can create enough understanding for you, the reader, that you're not going to contact us with some bullshit request and waste our time. You know, outside of e-commerce where product search makes the most sense, product and category search, you know, for consulting companies, any services business, it's got to be the problem you're looking for. So I did a webinar last year for SERPIQ where I found this fantastic example in local search. And it was like it was looking at the search volume between pet waste removal and pooper scooper. And people were looking for like pooper scooper services. And it was essentially like, take my dog for a walk, but I need you to walk my dog when he has to take shit. I don't feel like going out there and having to pick up the dog shit and throw it out. So, you know, pet waste removal service had like 10 searches, but it's the appropriate business term. Whereas like pooper scooper services was like 880 and like in just the Philadelphia area. So it's like, what is the actual solution? Find the language that describes the solution that you're actually providing, like the problem that you're fixing. And that's probably going to be a much better, higher intent, higher converting keyword anyway.
So how are you doing that? Are you querying and polling your existing customers? Are you going out and just taking random samplings? Are you using existing tools that are out there? Are you using a combination of all of those? You know, how do you know what's the right term to use? You know, one of the things that I do as part of a content strategy for ourselves, but also we do it for a lot of our clients, is we'll look around for people that are asking questions that we can answer. So I have, you know, the people that work for me, they are scouring the web constantly for every question that is possible about social media or about social business. And then we take that exact query and we make it part of our content. We make a blog post to answer that exact question. And if we were smart, we'd probably make a video about it as well. But we're smart. We just don't have time. But so that's how we go about making sure that we're answering the question in the right language for the people that are asking those questions. How do you go about determining that somebody's going to look for pet waste removal or pooper scooper services? How do you make that distinction? What are you doing to get there?
I mean, you know, I'll run a couple queries against Google and just look at the language that is coming back. You know, what are the languages that people are targeting? Start, you know, if you're ever trying to validate an opportunity in terms of a keyword, start by looking for who's bidding on it. You know, how many pay-per-click or advertisers are there? You know, if you've got a full stack, you're seeing three ads up top and eight down the right side, that's a competitive term. It's competitive because hopefully it's working, you know. Run, you know, use SEMrush or, you know, God forbid, Keyword Planner, and get some data on what people are paying for those clicks. You know, how viable are those terms for that business service or for that product or solution? From there, you know, there's a couple of really cool tools that have come out recently. So, like, I'm using SERPBlue for most of my SERP level monitoring. I like to do SERP level analysis. It seems everybody's doing that these days, but it was not the thing to do back, you know, even a year ago. People would focus so much more on the keyword and not who was actually ranking and how they were ranking. And then there's some really amazing keyword tools that have been coming out recently, like Term Explorer is a fantastic one that my buddy Ian Howes turned me on to. You know, the amount of data you're able to get and how much dissection you can do to sort of reverse engineer what's working, how it's working, and how much you're going to have to spend and how much time it's going to take to get there is really becoming just phenomenally easy. With a little bit of practice.
So what you're saying is listen to everything that Matt Cutts has said.
That is a surefire way to fail.
So. I know. Just kidding. I remember when you, in the class, I can't remember, you had a nickname for him, or like his unofficial title in your mind. You called him like the chief misinformation
liar.
Officer or something? Or liar. Liar. Misdirection, chief of misdirection.
Yeah, he's the chief of FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, all of which is unverifiable.
That's outstanding. It's a good way to take it. So, you know, as you've seen, obviously, you know, you're as much up on this stuff as I am, and in some ways, in other areas, far more than I am. So you're looking at the space and things that are out there, and you're seeing the Internet of Things coming up. You're seeing the collaborative economy. You're seeing wearables. You're seeing the emergence of video. You're seeing social signals. What do you think is coming down the road that you're either most concerned about or most excited about, and how that's going to impact e-commerce? Do you think that there are some things that are going to dramatically disrupt what's happening right now, or do you think it's going to be a slow kind of evolution from one thing to the next?
Personally, I personalized search scares me. You know, it's the whole sort of idea of, oh, just become a brand and, you know, give great customer service. And while those are valid points and, you know, we kill ourselves at Traffic Safety Store to maintain an extremely high customer retention level because it costs 10 times as much to get a new client as it does to keep an existing one, which is so true. It's one of those things where if people develop a brand affinity and Google recognizes it and it's starting to actually control and influence the search results that person is seeing and experiencing, and that's all, you know, those are the only ones they're ever really going to, they're not going to be able to break out of that personalized chamber that Google has put them in. That gets scary. I mean, that really raises the competitive bar. And, you know, I don't know if there's really enough people in the SEO industry really thinking long and hard about, you know, what am I going to do to combat personalized search? And, you know, even the nuances between personalized search on a desktop versus personalized search on a phone, because they're going to be completely different. You know, we'll see different search results now. If, you know, you're logged out and you open an incognito window on your iPhone versus in your browser, you're going to get results from the mobile index versus the desktop index, and you're still going to get personalized results based on the zip code you're in, or you know, there's been some speculation on whether or not Google can tell if you're moving, you know, and then they'll look at the speed, you know, if you're on a mobile device potentially. Some of this is some crazy speculation, but mm-hmm. You know, when you've got a team of doctors larger than any operating hospital in the country, you know, who really knows what's going on? And there's a lot of data being collected without us being fully aware it's being collected. So
yeah, and I think that's simultaneously scary and also awesome, because there is a benefit that we get from all of that data collection and what they're doing, and it makes our lives we get more relevant results to what we're looking for, which I think is a benefit to us. But at the same time, there is that creepy factor, like, well, what if they just turn on the microphone and listen to what we're listening to? So, and, you know, listen to what's happening around us to, you know, determine the ambient noise, to determine if we need a search result that was video or text based upon the environment we're in, or, you know, it's creepy, but at the same time, it's like, could it be more relevant? So there's definitely a line there. You'd mentioned personalized search. I just want to ask you real quick about, you know, the fragmenting search field. You know, Google has been king of the hill. It's still king of the hill. But as devices kind of become, you know, you have iPhones, you have iPads, you have Android devices, you have Windows devices, there are a bevy of social media sites with their own search. Do you see the fragmenting of search becoming a problem for companies trying to figure out where it is that you're going to put your time and invest your effort and everything, when, you know, Siri is going to deliver me a Bing result or a Yelp result, and Google Now is going to deliver me a Google result? Is that a problem for you, or do you typically still only focus mostly on Google?
I think it's a problem that's sort of going away.
Really? So you think it's the opposite?
I mean, in the sense that users are becoming more sophisticated. You know, my 6-year-old niece can use an iPad in ways that I will probably never be able to. It always was there. I was at a talk not too long ago where I heard something that was fantastically brilliant and insightful. And it was, you know, to a 5-year-old, a magazine is just a broken iPad.
Yeah.
Like they never had that experience. It never existed. It was never there. Like the generation that's coming up, the Snapchat generation, they're technologists beside, you know, in spite of themselves. They don't even realize that that's what they are, but they are. There's going to be, you know, all the people who don't know that Google serves ads, and the people that don't have a search engine preference and just use whatever is the default in their browser, they're dying. They're leaving the planet, and they're leaving the search engines, and, you know, we're being replaced by significantly more sophisticated users, and these more sophisticated users are going to have preferences. They're going to know which search engine they want to use. They're going to know what information source they want to use, and that's what they're going to use. So I think as technology adoption and education sort of converge, that fragmentation between different informational portals is going to sort of go away.
Interesting. Also, when you said the thing about the, you know, a child coming up now in a magazine, it made me think, like, what if somebody handed me a stone tablet, you know, like back when I was a kid, like I would look at it and be like, what do I do with this? Yeah. Interesting. Well, Nick, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I know that you're a busy dude and you're building empires. So why don't you tell people where they can go and be social with you, learn more about you? I know you've given us some links generously of some really awesome resources. We'll put them in the show notes. But where else can people go to be social with you, learn more about you, and see what you're doing?
Hit me up on Twitter. You know, if you guys feel like harassing the guy who actually has the Nick Eubanks handle without the space in it, please do that. I've been trying to buy that for like 4 years. He totally doesn't deserve it to use it. I'm unfortunately the Nick_Eubanks on Twitter, but I'm pretty active on there. You know, other than that, I think I'm a pretty easy guy to find on the internet. So find me, annoy me if you want to, ask me questions. I'm always down to chat this stuff.
Cool, man. I super appreciate you coming on. You're such a smart dude, and you know, I'd have you back anytime you ever want to come back. And just thanks so much for being on. And to all the people that are listening to this episode, go harass the hell out of that Nick Eubanks without the space. We got to get this, man. I mean, Nick just dropped the knowledge on you, so make it happen for him. Just go be like, yo, what's up, man? Why are you holding on to this? Why are you squatting? We'll put all those links in the show notes also, so people can connect with you and all the different things that you mentioned as resources. Nick, thanks so much for being on the show. You kick ass, man.
Thanks so much for having me, man.
Cool, man. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Bye, everybody. Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed that episode of Conversations. Be sure to go over to iTunes or Stitcher and give us a rating. Tell us what you love about the show, what you hate about the show. And we hope you come back for our next episode. Take care.